Yeah. Oh my God. We've been talking for 47 minutes.
Good God.
But it's to make up for last week.
It's to make up since we cheated you from our brilliant insight on bad movie last week.
Out of your garage. I'm Corey Culp.
I'm Freddie Woth.
It is April and we have a new theme.
We do.
And we don't know what it's called yet.
We haven't. We're taking, email us. We're taking suggestions.
You're looking already. You know what the movie is. It's 2009's Law Abiding Citizen from director F. Gary Gray, who both of us got reminded that he was the director when he got his splash screen at the end of the movie, because I completely forgot.
I guess I didn't. It's funny. This is not a movie that I associate with him. I feel like there was some bigger movie, because this movie, was this movie a big hit? Because I just kind of remember it coming in and then like 3 months later, it was on DVD.
For a DVD era movie and actually we're moving into Blu-ray right around this time too. I think it might have a simultaneous release. $127 million against the $63 budget sounds about right for a mild hit.
Sure.
Because remember, this one, again, we don't really say this very much, but during that DVD window / Blu-ray window, the business, the bean counters always referred to the theatrical window as free money because they knew they were going to make, they felt they were always going to make their money back on the rental and purchasing side of DVD. So
sure.
So 127 again they doubled the budget. I mean, they still made a few shekels on the back end after P&A. Right?
This was his follow up to Be Cool. That's what it was. It was like he was on a hot streak. He Italian Job.
Hot streak.
I mean, his hot streak started with Friday.
Yeah.
Set it off. Well, look, man, Friday, Set It Off, The Negotiator, and Man Apart. Well, we can kind of forget about that. But Italian Job, I mean, they kind of kept getting, the hits kept getting bigger. Italian Job was a big movie.
Negotiator is a lot like Law Abiding Citizen if you looked at his whole catalog.
Yeah,
very like movies.
Sure.
Just the corruption within law enforcement / the judicial system. Yeah, it works.
Yeah, there's definitely themes. The same sort of themes are running through it.
Right. As opposed to like Italian Job being a remake, but like even when he did Straight Outta Compton, it was, that's still a biopic. Did F. Gary Gray do a second? I thought he did another biopic. What was it?
Friday. Was Friday not a biopic? It was someone's bio.
Isn't Chili Palmer a real life person?
Yeah, of course. What do you mean? I mean, Travolta nailed it. He spent time undercover with Chili Palmer. No, I think F. Gary Gray, I think that's his only biopic.
It is. Now that I'm thinking about it, it is.
Yeah.
So if you guys listened to Kickstart this week, you heard us bleep a couple of things.
Oh,
and it was the title of this movie.
Right, because I was just like, blah, 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 by its citizen.
What's so funny is I don't think I would have caught it in the edit if you didn't say something.
Oh, no, I just kind of slipped it in there.
So to speak.
What was funny was because I was saying I had started watching it on Saturday night on Peacock. And God damn it, man, if when I went to finish the movie today, it was gone from Peacock. And I ended up having to rent it and start over, which is fine because I was only 15 minutes in. And that first 15 minutes is actually pretty good. It sets everything up and you really kind of, I don't know that I would have, there were some things I missed on Saturday night. Starting over was not a big deal. I probably would have started over even if it was still there on Peacock, but it wasn't. Fuckers. This movie is such a weird movie because like I told you off mic, let's start first. This is kind of also everybody's real sort of, here's Gerard Butler doing what Gerard Butler's going to do from here on out. He's going to be a bad motherfucker. And, you know, you tell me this, what I love about this movie is who's the bad guy, who's the good guy.
Right.
You know, if we're looking at the traditional, you know, good guy, bad guy, black and white of it all, it's Jamie Foxx is the good guy.
Right.
Gerard's doing bad shit. So obviously he's the bad guy, but it's things aren't as they seem and it's not as clear as that. But this is the first movie that kind of introduced us to, this is Jamie Foxx doing his post-Oscar sort of, you know, whatever you want to call it, thing that he does.
Right.
That's kind of always the same. But Gerard Butler, this is kind of the, you know, I had seen Gerard Butler mostly, they were trying to make him a romantic lead. I mean, outside of Dracula.
P.S. I Love You, right?
Yeah, P.S. I Love You, The Bounty Hunter with Jennifer Aniston, all those kind of silly movies. But, you know, that's what they were doing. He was a good-looking, big, fucking handsome brute. You know, they kept pairing up with people like Katie Heigl, Jennifer Aniston, and Hilary Swank, right? P.S. I Love You?
Yeah, P.S. I Love You, yeah. Okay. Hilary Swank.
So, yeah, I mean, he's coming from those movies, and then there's, you know, then there's a couple exceptions. But this, I think, is the movie that sort of launches him into that next, to where he is now, the Gerard Butler we all know and love. And, you know, we kind of worship at the altar of Butler, you know, when each new movie comes out, and we're like, fuck yeah. Yeah. This is the first one.
Right.
And this movie is just packed full of fucking talent with him. You know, there's so many, like I was telling you, there's so many these faces when they just kept popping up. I was like, oh my God, I forgot he was in this movie. I forgot he was in this movie. Yep. I forgot he was in this movie. I mean, it's, and Leslie Bibb, when she first showed up, I was like, is that Katherine Heigl? When we see her in the before the 10-year time lapse, right? When she's supposed to be the young partner at 25, and they don't really ever. It's funny the way they shot that. It's very, you know, it's kind of smoky lit and soft focuses, and you don't get a good look at her. There's never like a oner, right?
Right.
It's always just kind of off. I didn't remember. I was like, what the fuck? Why are they doing that? What does she do to these guys?
Right. It wasn't like at that point, Leslie wasn't of an age where she couldn't play 10 years younger.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, she was,
weird, right?
Yeah. It was just weird. I mean, but again, it all makes sense because it kind of, you know, it's funny. Jamie Foxx doesn't look like he aged one day from in the 10 years that have gone by, nor did Bruce McGill. But that being said, they wanted her, I guess we wanted Leslie to look like her and the little girl are the only two I think they were. There was no little girl. She was a bump.
Right.
And then, and Leslie. So, but all very effective. It's done really well. And I think I had said to you, I felt like this was a a Death Wish knockoff, right? Like, it's easy to say because there's tons of them.
Yeah,
and exactly. Everybody says it. Oh, this is just a derivative of Death Wish. And if we had just covered this movie without watching it again, I would have said the same thing. Right. But it's not that. Not just that.
It's a little deeper than that. Yeah.
It's got elements of lots of things that we love.
Lots of things in it. But yeah, and usually if you don't pick the right things, you get a goulash of...
Yeah, you just get a...
poor tasting soup, you know?
You just get something that's like, you know, you don't care. You know, halfway through you're like, let me look at my phone. How many emails have I got? But this thing is pretty... I mean, I don't want to say edge of your seat but you kind of don't know where things are going at times, right?
Even like, when you've seen it, there's so much you forget, and you had brought up a moment in the movie where just something that happens, and again, this is definitely one of those movies that if you've not seen it before, we're going to do you a disservice and not get into those details.
Yeah.
But there was a moment here where you asked me a question, we both kind of felt this... not the same way, but we didn't expect what actually had happened, was going to happen.
Right.
And it's a testament to the movie because sometimes movies try to be too cute, you know, like Usual Suspects, right? Just try to be way too cute. And the twists and turns of this movie are so effective and surprising even when you've seen it before. You know, granted, it's been 15 years because this movie will be 15 years this October.
Right.
That I don't remember a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what we were talking about pre-mic. We misremembered so much from the overall story to little things.
Well, it's super effective at doing things that aren't usually accomplished in a way that is either it works, first of all, right. or second, you feel like, you feel like you've been manipulated, right?
Right.
But they manage, I mean, they make you root for the bad guy.
Yeah, finger quotes for sure.
Finger air quotes, pop, yeah. The bad guy. Because, you know, Clyde Shelton is, you know, he's killing people. He's righting wrongs. He's like an avenging angel.
Right.
And it's so funny because, you know, even at, you know, and at the end, I don't want to blow it for everybody. But, you know. I'm just going to say this, you can cut this out, but God damn, I was fucking pissed, dude. I knew how it was going to end, but I was still like, there was like me hoping like, this is a director's cut that I haven't seen and the end is different. Nope.
No.
It wasn't.
And I'm just going to let's just go ahead and continue to talk about it. I'm not going to edit it out. I'm just going to bleep it out.
Okay.
Because I don't want it to affect our conversation about
right.
it. That ending pissed me off so much, and my mind clearly just pushed it down where I wasn't. And he goes, you know what? The best way for you to remember this or enjoy this movie is not to remember a fucking thing about it.
No, totally. This is the perfect movie for fucking filmnesia.
Yeah.
This would be a movie.
General amnesia.
You should take the goddamn pill and just watch it again.
10 years from now, we're doing this podcast. It's not going to be filmnesia anymore. It's going to be Alzheimer's.
We'll just cover it again in 10 years and see what happens.
Film dementia.
Film dementia. Yeah, exactly. What's crazy about this movie is it again, back to the Death Wish thing. It's Death Wish a little bit, just by the setup, the premise. But what it really is kind of a deconstruction of the Saw franchise.
Yeah.
When you figure out, I mean, I didn't remember all of what Clyde Shelton, I didn't remember any of that he was a fucking CIA fucking spook.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
He's the architect. You know, but we go in to kill people with armies and then we couldn't do that. And we just bring in Clyde and he figures it out. And the guy chokes himself with a necktie. What? you know, and dude, was I not right? Aren't there points in this where fucking Butler looks like he could be he looks like a morphing Jeff Bridges. Like there's the opening when he's after the first thing happens and he's sitting there and he literally looks like Starman. Like he's like, huh?
What? There's something about him because being a tall guy and the way his lack of vitamin E shows its face a lot. You know what I mean?
Mm, yeah. I think he likes to drink a little.
Right. Kind of like that. There's something like there was that one period of time where Vince Vaughn was the same way. I mean, they're the same. Both guys have a very similar
stature,
physical. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Height, build, everything that. There are moments where he looks like that, but there's also moments where you kind of like, you forget how pretty he was in like Reign of Fire, even a movie like that, or even Rock and Roller. I mean, of course, I'm bleeping that out because we're doing that movie too.
Right.
So.
Yeah, no, I mean, totally. I mean, he's a good looking dude. He's rugged. He's, you know, he's a good looking, rugged bloke, if you will.
But the way, because when you're introduced to him in this movie, it's a flashback-esque kind of thing, sort of. It's filmed totally different than the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
When you're all in the moment, and quite honestly, it's filmed differently than the flashbacks that you see in the movie.
Right. It's almost filmed like a security camera shot it.
Yeah.
You know, oddly enough.
You know, if anything, they probably bit off the opening of The Fugitive.
Yeah.
It's very, very much like that.
Look, dude, I was thinking like this movie, you're taking all the best pieces of something and usually that doesn't work. But they took what they took from each movie because there's also some Seven mixed into this.
Yeah.
Especially the library with all the green lamps. I was like,
they each other's the same library. That would have been amazing. There's very much a John Doe-esque kind of thing here. But unlike John Doe and Seven, you recognize what he's doing, and but you don't agree with what he's doing.
Right.
That opening scene sets you up. You are on Gerard's side all the way.
Well, that's what I'm saying, dude. They literally make you root for John Doe.
Yep.
They figured out how to do it. I don't know how many test screenings they had to have to figure that out, but God bless them for doing it because there's not one moment where I don't want Clyde to fucking get every last fucking one of them.
Yeah.
And some of them, it's not even their fault, but I don't care. I just want him to get them all.
The only exception is you just like Regina and the kid don't deserve to die because the whole premise of the movie that you couldn't do that anyway. He would never let that happen.
Right. But Clyde's not targeting them. He doesn't find them responsible. And that's another mistake they don't make.
That the moment, and I'm going to say, this is going to be the most 1,000 hertz tone of anything I've ever done, but here's some more 1,000 hertz tone for you. When Leslie Bibb and like 3 or 4 other cars get blown up.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, why didn't it happen to Nick? Go, he's saving you for last. But part of me, even before that line says, before he's saving you for last, I kept thinking, fuck, did he take the wrong car?
Oh, well, right? It's funny. You know, what I was thinking was Nick was never in that danger. I felt like the way it was going to play out, the way I would have liked it to play out, is Nick would have had to live with all of it.
Right.
I mean, he does anyway, but like,
right.
I mean, but you know, I would have liked for Clyde to escape somehow, somewhere, even as much as I don't really mean that, because then that fucks the ending up too. If he just gets off scot-free and we're going to law abiding citizen too, and we're going to bring, you know, U.S. Marshals into it, and they're going to be whatever.
Yeah. And dude, before when the trial has happened, for the two pieces of, the one piece of shit that did what he did to Clyde's family, you could kind of get away with kind of being on the fence. Like you look at Ricochet, you can kind of be on the fence. You know, you understand John Lithgow's character in Ricochet, why he does what he does. You're supposed to side with Denzel because Denzel was just doing his job. He didn't do anything wrong. Where Jamie Foxx, his character in this, Nick, the reason why you instantly are going to side with Clyde long before he starts carrying out his plan. But in the present moment, trials happened. They made their fucking deal. Seeing him shake hands with that piece of shit afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
That was it. That basically lit the fuse.
That newspaper clipping on the wall.
Yeah.
When they.
Yep.
You're like, But us seeing it, what I liked about it was the sort of deep throat moment where the guy comes in, you know, still not sure that guy wasn't a plan. It wasn't part of the whole plan.
When they're talking about the man on the outside, he's yes. got help.
Right.
You know, part of me is thinking why wouldn't it be him? You know?
Right. But I don't know. Well, like when he said, did you get my accomplice? And they're like, yes, they never got it. Did I miss something? Cause I don't know that they ever got it. I don't think he had an accomplice. I think it was all him.
No, he didn't. It was,
right.
He
was testing them.
Right. It was a test. Cause it let him know that they didn't know shit. They didn't know he's been sneaking. Well, sorry. I'm just going to say, I'm bleeping everything anyway. So
sure. This is going to be the bleepingest episode ever.
Or we can just say, put the biggest disclaimer ever at the
beginning. Spoilers. Spoiler alert.
This is easily the most, it's so easy to spoil this movie. It really is.
Also, I feel like this is probably, not that there aren't going to be, I'm not saying that I know our listeners, that there's guys I could tell you who has seen it.
Right.
But I'm just saying this is a movie I feel like, anybody else who's listening, maybe for the first time, they've come across this on Spotify or whatever. They might not have seen this movie because, you know, dude, when I bought those two steelbooks at Best Buy, the guy's like, dude, love that movie. I just made my girlfriend watch it. I was like, oh. He's like, yeah, that fucking ending sucks, though. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The guy you're talking about, too, the deep throat guy, Michael Kelly, I mean, again, along with the rest of his fucking cast, but then we didn't mention Viola Davis playing the fucking mayor of Philly. Regina Hall playing Nick's wife and Jamie Foxx's wife. F. Gary Gray's been in the business long enough to, you know, his name being attached to a movie, especially with his own production company involved in it, he's going to get whoever he wants, he's going to get. I mean, I remember when I used to work for FedEx, I would deliver it to him. He was renting a space. They were editing The Negotiator on this avocado farm out in Moorpark. And that was the first time I'd ever seen an Avid. This is like 98, I think. 98,
97? Must be, yeah. The movie came out in 98, I think.
Yeah.
Sometime around then.
It was him and his best friend that kind of, he gave him a gig, little, you know, that little buddy nepotism, right?
Yeah.
And he was talking to me about how both Samuel Jackson and his counterpart in the movie were the first choices. And they play so well off each other. And I don't feel this is on, this is probably why I feel so much like Negotiator is very similar to this, is that it does have that man versus man. It's really about Clyde versus Nick. And
well, right versus wrong.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. But, yeah. You know, but again, it's clouded because who's right and who's wrong. I mean, it's funny when you watch it, it's like, especially, you know, they do a really good job. And, you know, part of it is the casting of Jamie Foxx. I feel like Jamie Foxx is an actor who, I guess my personal, I just, you know, he just, some, there's, like I said, there's three movies I like him in. And then, you know, other times I'm just like, oh, whatever, dude. But he is an actor who can play both sides of the fence, right? Like very easily. And sometimes he can do both within the same role, and he does a really good job of it in this movie. I'm not saying that I, what am I saying? Not walking backwards on this. I'm just saying it's a casting choice because it works. Right. For me, I see him, I see his actions, and I'm like, fuck you.
But let's think about that. I'm not really drawn to his work.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't go out of my way to see movies he's in.
Right.
There's a couple I enjoy.
Yeah. With this, though, I think as a director, and Gary produced the movie, too, I think he picked him very deliberately because, well, he's got a certain likability for people, not for me, but he has a certain snarkiness that he has in everything he does, even when he's likable, even when he's supposed to be likable, but he's not supposed to be in this. So that snarkiness comes off as arrogance.
Well, he's supposed, yes, and you're right. He's playing, Nick is as arrogant as they come.
Yep.
You know, it's funny because this is totally the opposite from him in Collateral, which is one of the movies I actually really, really like him. I think he's great.
I think he's very, I really enjoy him in that too.
And this is like, you know, this is like the mirrored image of his character from Collateral. But those things aside, the two actors, they're great. Their scenes together are really good. Like all the stuff between them, they have a good, I don't want to say camaraderie, maybe that's not the right word, but their chemistry between the two of them, it's all believable. There's a built-in tension that works all the time.
Right.
You know, one always thinks he has the upper hand. Right. Both ways, right? They both think they have that last scene, you know, the last scene of the movie before, you know, all hell literally breaks loose, and fire shoots up the walls and everything else. It's all fantastic.
Right.
Let's go back to the Saw thing, some of his kills are so elaborate. I was just like,
dude,
this is
okay.
The judge one was fucked up, dude.
Scared the fuck out of me, dude. I completely forgot about it.
Yeah. I'm looking at, Annie Corley, who plays the Judge Birch.
Right.
And again, it's funny because they subtly did it, because usually I catch things like that. But early on, she tells him no cell phones in my court.
Right.
And it's kind of a throwaway. I you know.
Right.
Usually I'd be like, oh, that shit's going to come back and bite someone in the head. I didn't even think about it. And then, you know, cut to an hour and 30 minutes later in the movie. And, you know, she answers the phone and it explodes her fucking head. I was like, what?
And then she gets the snark back to him before.
Right. Right. She gives him some shit back to him. Well, that's what you get for being a judge. And pow.
But think about this. Everybody that is Nick being targeted, Nick is never going to die. Like, you know, Clyde's intention is for this man to lose everything. People he's close to work-wise, people he's close to like work-wise and personally. And he's going to tax him and he's going to have to live with it for the rest of his life. That's the intention of Clyde. And everybody, almost, I mean, not everybody, but almost everybody deserves what they get. And I know that sounds fucking terrible to say, but looking it through Clyde's eyes, I mean, it's not any different. Like you didn't mention, this is kind of like when we start steeping into the Death Wish side of things, where is the righteousness of the guy carrying out the plan, is it justified, you know?
Right. It's a fine line. You know, he's putting himself above the law.
Right.
Or is he? I mean, I don't think that Clyde ever really thought he was going to get away with it. You know what I mean? I think his end game was like, I'm going to get them all and then they're going to get me. You know what I mean? Right. I don't think that he thought, you know, again, because being that kind of fixer kind of person, you know, and you're building the better mousetrap, right?
Right.
The best mousetrap catches all the mice, yourself included.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's just unfortunate that he didn't get them all.
Because here's the thing. He admits to killing two people. So that's going to give him a certain amount of time in jail.
Absolutely.
And so quite honestly for him, though, even though it's part of his plan, even though part of his plan is to put himself as far down into the prison system, so to speak. I'll let you figure that out for yourself if you haven't seen the movie yet, once you watch it. But it's all part of his plan. And part of his plan is like, look, here's the one thing that's not true. The only thing that's not part of his plan is he doesn't plan to die by any point along the way during his plan. That's the only thing that he's not planning for.
But don't you think he would have planned for it? Like, given all the variables and running the numbers and doing the math, there's a 99.5% chance you're not going to make it.
The thing about it really surprises me is that he never set up any kind of alarm system. Like when Colmini is at the back door.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I thought for some reason my head was like, there's a booby trap there.
Sure. I was totally expecting like a lightning rod to fall off the building and impale it in the fucking alley standing there.
There are a couple little things that kind of frustrate me. Again, that ending, and I really wonder, is this a Chatsworth screen test that fucked up the ending? You know what I mean? I want to know, was the original script like this?
I'm curious to what the unrated director's cut is.
Yeah. How funny is it that you're watching a man run around killing people and you're not totally satisfied with the outcome?
Right? I mean, I mean, 9 times out of 10, a guy offs that many people in a movie, you're like, you want him to get his due diligence. But again, that's the point of the movie. It is called Law-Abiding Citizen. So, you know, and they're definitely sort of they're setting up a scenario and they're taking us, you know, they're taking us on that journey. Like, so look, man, I did everything right. And I'm still, here's where I'm at.
Right.
You know, when he tells Nick, you didn't even try. I would have been fine with that if you had tried. You know, it kind of, I feel like that goes a long way with leaning into like, okay, I'm with you, dude. And as a viewer, you're just like, no, if you weren't all in at that point, there's two moments, that one.
Right.
And then when, right before Sarah gets killed in the explosions outside and she has her moment with Nick and she says, hope I didn't give up all those things just for a high conviction rate.
Right.
You know, which is funny because I don't feel like it affects Nick at all. He's like,
No.
He looks at her like, well, that's what it's about.
So one of the things that we've talked about for the last 30 minutes is how much we love Gerard Butler in this movie and how much we're just, let's put it this way, Jamie Foxx doesn't sway me one way or the other. I'm just as indifferent to his performance as I was before I watched it again.
See, I'm not. I'm a little bit more into it now because what I want to say is talking about it. I can't imagine anybody else cast as Nick.
Okay.
That would make me feel the way I feel. No?
This is what I'm building up to. Originally, these two parts were swapped with the two guys.
Who?
Right?
Hmm.
Initially, Gerard signed on to.
I don't know.
Gerard signed on to play Nick originally, and Jamie was supposed to be Clyde.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I'm kind of glad that didn't happen.
No, I agree. The way the kind of parts that Gerard has now is more like Nick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Olympus movies are kind of like.
But are they? Because I don't know that he has that slick thing. I feel why it works for Jamie Foxx. When you just blew my mind with that because I cannot picture, I can't picture Butler playing Nick. I can't.
No, I can't.
He doesn't
either.
Have that slick sort of. It's a different thing when if Butler was to play the heel, if you will.
Right.
Somehow, I feel like there's still an everyman about Butler in every role.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like in the Olympus Has Fallen movie, like his Secret Service agent. He's an everyman. He's a regular guy who's put into you know, not unlike John McClane in Die Hard.
Right.
I'm just saying it in general. I'm not saying it's as good as Die Hard. No, I hate anybody.
Because, I mean, that's where the movie starts. I mean, sure. the original one starts and they've spun off two other movies that don't, that aren't Die Hard 2 and Die Hard 3, so.
Right, exactly. Right. So, but, you know, that's interesting to, I wonder what swayed them to flip that. But anyway, that's so weird, dude, especially after we've been talking about it. And I'm also just sort of coming around to Jamie Foxx's performance in this because maybe I do like it. Maybe I do like his performance in this because the movie doesn't work the other way for me. Well, I mean, I can't imagine it.
But it's like what I was saying before about Jamie and the general perception that I have of him, I don't think it's much different than most people. I think most people kind of feel that way. He's snarky in whatever he does. So it's easy for him to play that, but I've seen him play a bad guy. He played Electro, the second half of the second Spider-Man movie with Andrew Garfield. He can't play a part like that. And that's basically what Clyde is. Clyde is the calculating, what do they call him officially? What did the CIA, the deep throat guy call him?
Not a machinist, but a... God, what is that line?
I forget the line. It's not an accountant because that's somebody else. And then the movie Nobody, it's...
I'm just the cleaner.
I forget whatever he calls him. Again, if you're watching the movie again. Here's the, if you've seen the movie before, well, watched it again.
Basically, he's a fixer.
He fixes problems. Right. But as he says, you know, if Clyde wants you dead, you're dead. You're dead.
Right.
You're dead long before you even think he's even on to you or wants you dead. You're dead. I don't think Jamie Foxx is capable of playing a part like that. So the whole flip-flop scenario was like, wait, how did he sign on that? How did he sign for that part to begin with? Because I don't see that possible.
No.
Frank Darabont, too, was signed on before F. Gary Gray.
Oh, yeah. See, I can't.
And then that makes me wonder, was Frank on when Gerard and Jamie signed on? I don't know. I don't have the details of that part of it. Again, I might want to have to crack open that Blu-ray and watch some of the extras.
Yeah, no doubt, right? Like, it's 11 minutes longer. There's 11 minutes added footage.
That's a lot. That's considerable.
Yeah, I mean, it's an hour and 49 minutes.
Right, we don't hear about any deaths off screen.
Right, so it's an hour and 49 minutes, the version you and I watched, I'm assuming. We watched the same one.
Right.
Then there's an hour and 58 minute cut, and there's an hour and 59 minute cut. So there's a 10 and 11 minute longer versions, and I'm sure that's what's on those Blu-rays.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, a lot can happen in 11 minutes. You know, that, right?
Especially when
we always say, God, if they just trim 10 minutes, or if they just trim 12 minutes out of this movie.
Yeah. And to give yourself some scope there. The difference in runtime between RoboCop and the director's cut is 34 seconds.
Right.
And it's considerable.
So, here you go. Look, spies are a dime a dozen. I'm a spy. Clyde is a brain. He's a think tank type guy.
Yeah,
his
specialty
tank,
was
low impact kinetic operations. That's what he says. That's a hell of a fancy way to say he kills people.
Yes.
We all kill people.
Oh, I kept saying accountant a whole bunch. No, he is the calculator the accountant uses. That's what it is.
Yeah, totally. There you go. He is a think tank type guy. Yeah, I mean, dude, I love the way that guy, I mean, I love that whole scene. That just the way the three of them standing there, the way it's framed up. And the guy walking by, you know, you're supposed to, you know, maybe that whole hallway is lined with cameras. We don't know. If Nick wants you dead, you're already dead. Yeah, I can't imagine it flipped around. Can't imagine it having the same kind of, because there's a kinetic energy to the movie that makes it fun to watch. I can't imagine that with Frank Darabont. I'm going to say, I don't think I like a Frank, I don't know that I'd have to look and think. Yeah. I feel like all Frank Darabont's movies are super low key to me. I know I don't care for The Green Mile. I fell asleep. What is his, I guess The Mist? What is his, The Majestic? And I'm not a Shawshank guy. So I'm going to say that those movies are all paced similarly. And I don't know that that works for this type movie.
As we're talking here, and whether I keep this in the episode or not, there is apparently Jamie Foxx, it was his idea.
To switch?
To swap roles. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, dude, take my hat off to him if that was his. I mean, good call, dude. Well, good call, Jamie.
Here's the thing. In an interview, Gerard took credit for it.
Sure. Why not?
So.
You never know.
It says, Butler also said he initially regretted that this idea was implemented by the other producers, but added that the entire process worked out well for the project.
Yes.
So it's like.
Amen.
Here's the thing that doesn't matter. Gerard Butler thought he was capable of playing the role of Nick, and then ultimately he recognized after the end of the day that it was better to switch the other way. But as we discussed, I don't think it would have been possible to do the other way. I don't know if I'm in the movie theater if it's the other way.
No, I don't know that I would be either. I mean, again, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it would have appealed to me. I remember seeing this. I was on location. And I wanted to go to a movie just because I wanted to go somewhere where I didn't have to answer my phone for a few hours. That's where I saw it.
Right.
I think it had just opened, or maybe it had already been out for a week or so. And I saw it with a fairly rowdy, I think I was in Boston maybe, a fairly rowdy Boston crowd, you know, and it was a good time. I mean, I remember really enjoying it. Like I said, didn't remember a ton about it. And then, you know, I watched it. I think I owned the DVD at one time. I think I bought a used one because I wanted to see it again. And there used to be a video store in my house, and they would sell their copies. They'd order, you know, like every video store did back in the day. And I don't know that I enjoyed it as much then as I did today or the first time I saw it. So it's one of those movies. I feel like it's gotten better with age. And I don't know if that's just because of everything that's come after it. You know, we've sort of all, you know, embraced Butler. I mean, you know, but again, I want to say the Jamie Foxx movies that I enjoy, he always is kind of this guy. Like, I really love Any Given Sunday. I think he's great in it. Dude, he nailed, he's the jerk off quarterback 100%. He's perfect in that movie. He's great. I'm going to add this to the list. So there's four that I can think of off the top of my head. The other ones would be Bait.
Bait's not bad.
Bait is fun, dude.
We've seen that movie a bunch of ways.
Sure, dude. Yeah. Like, right. They make Bait, like, or they used to make it, like, every few years. They just plug in different actors. They still do to some extent. I feel like the last one probably had Jason Statham in it.
It didn't?
I'm sure I could find a version of it that's got Statham in it. Now talking about it and sort of getting it all out, Fox is really good in this. It doesn't work without him. It does. I don't know that it works with any other actors, and it definitely doesn't work if you flip them. So they both did their job in this movie, and you know they make it work. Didn't expect to love this movie. Oh, Kingdom is the other movie I like, and
Kingdom,
the Peter Berg movie, I like it a lot.
Seriously, that, like, you know, when people talk about Sicario, and I love Sicario, I really do. I think Denis did a fantastic job.
But I say Kingdom first.
But yeah, exactly. What a great combo, because you get to see two similar type of movies with drastically, not honestly different results, because I like them both, but drastically different. It's just like the Water movies, right?
Right.
You have an idea, like, I want to make a movie like this, and then that's how different it ends up being. I really enjoy Kingdom a lot. I think that's underrated. And Jennifer Garner fucking stellar in it.
Kingdom has some definitely shocking moments, some things you don't see coming.
Yes.
And we've all seen that movie, right? We've all seen that movie a bunch. But Kingdom does a lot of things really well. It's a good watch. I'm also going to go five on the Jamie Foxx list for me. I'm going to go against unpopular opinion. I love Miami Vice. The Michael Mann movie.
Haven't we not talked about this?
We have.
If we're going to do a Michael Mann month, and Collateral was one of them, and Miami Vice was the other. And it was funny because, like, I think of what it was. I think we didn't do one because we were trying to figure out what other two movies can we cover that nobody hasn't been incessantly covered on other shows. And it's hard not to, because Michael Mann is so beloved by most of the film community as far as the film watchers go. So it's hard to, like, those two movies, I can't recall a lot of people getting into them, Collateral and Miami Vice. I think Miami Vice I think people are coming around to that, by the way, now. I think it goes without saying how much love we have for Colin Farrell on the show. I mean, I think he's only second to Nick Cage as far as the love that gets dispersed here.
And Gerard Butler, apparently.
Yeah, well.
Well, here you go.
Okay, so we're laying this out now. Are we putting this on Main Street right now?
Yeah, I think we have to. We're saying, are we going to do a Colin Farrell month or a?
we need to.
Well, we've been saying that for a long time.
So, because we don't have a name for our theme, we'll just go ahead and say this. This is our Gerard Butler Love Fest for April.
Yeah, totally.
This is just movie one of four.
Ring the butler, baby. Ring the butler.
Ring.
Ring the butler.
I have a feeling that most people are going to enjoy this month. I'm hoping at least two of these movies have low viewership and that our audience hasn't seen them.
I'm going to say, I think all four of them are kind of under the radar.
Yeah. And I want to say the third one.
Not
that
they're not seen. Right. Well, the third one, especially is the most, probably is pretty the recent. Current, most current. Yeah, sure.
He is somebody that again, when you come to a leading man, he's the kind of guy that you want to put. If you're a producer, I want that guy in my movie because it's going to bring dudes in because he's relatable or people want to kind of be a cool, badass, smooth guy like him. I was trying to explain him to Joey once. I said, Gerard Butler is Pedro Pascal 15 years ago. You know what I mean? They're very similar. They don't have the same parts, but they have the same charisma, a similar charisma, I should say. I think that you're going to discover watching these movies with us that that's not a stretch of a comparison.
Nope. Yeah. I mean, he's, I want to say there's a, I'm going to call it rootability. You always kind of want, you're always rooting for Butler's character, no matter, even if he's the bad guy and he's fucking off and fucking people left and right.
So you want to follow the show on the socials, you can follow us at Karate Pod on Twitter, Insta, and Letterboxd. If you want to follow Corey on Letterboxd, it's Corey_Culp. And on Instagram is Culprit97. And if you want to follow some other socials, another linkage, you can look at the bottom of our episode show notes under Karate in the Garage linkage, and you'll find everything there.
If you'd like to follow me on Instagram, I'm at rockandroller33. If you'd like to follow me on Letterboxd, I'm at Tom Cody on Letterboxd. If you'd like to follow me at Blue Sky, it's The Real John Ladd at Blue Sky.